everybody. This is Joe from Cold Country Wargaming. How y'all doing today? Just figured I'd join you. Just did a tournament the other day. Brought my Chaos Knights again. It's been a while since I've done a podcast or any sort of talks about Warhammer because I've been kind of letting 9th edition settle in. I wanted to get a feel for it, get a couple events under my belt, kind of see where my armies shook out. The first one I really wanted to take for a ride was Chaos Knights, because I know before 9th dropped and immediately after, people were kind of disparaging Knights. They wouldn't be able to keep up in a 9th edition meta that was so reliant on holding objectives, and with terrain being so impactful and Knights not really benefiting from any of that, people have kind of left Knights out of the conversation as far as the meta goes of being competitive. I'm not exactly going to say that these people were wrong, because there is a lot of validity to what they're saying. However, I will touch on a few points that I think make Knights a little better than what people were thinking. I don't think they're ever going to top a major event. However, I do think they are a solid mid-tier army, especially Chaos Knights, which are what I play. I do think they're a solid mid-tier army, and they are really capable of catching people out. In a 3-game event, it wouldn't be uncommon to go 2-1. In a 5-game, it wouldn't be uncommon to go 4-1 or 3-2. You would have plenty of games where you're going to have a good time. You're not going to get beat too bad. I don't think you can ask for much more than that. I mean, they're definitely not overpowered, and I think some things will be alleviated when Chaos Knights eventually get a 9th edition codex, hopefully. But yeah, we could kind of get into the nitty-gritty, and I could talk about Chaos Knights and how they perform at events and some things I've noticed and some things I'd like to try in the future. The first thing I want to talk about is probably the major gripe most people have with Knights. It's definitely the rock, paper, scissors aspect of what they are. Anybody who plays pure Knights will know that you either win hard or you lose hard. There's very rarely tight matches with Knights. It usually swings hard one way or another. Some might see that as a drawback. Personally, I see that as kind of their thing. At the end of the day, they're a skew army. They're relying on that skew, and they're taking advantage of people that aren't ready for it. And if you're not ready for Knights, you're going to lose hard. It just is what it is. They are a counter meta in a lot of ways. If the meta ever goes too infantry heavy, and then you bring Knights, you're liable to clean up, because people will be building to counter infantry and not 24 wound toughness A vehicles. There's a lot they can do to disrupt an opponent's plans. If they don't at least have a well-rounded list that can at least somewhat handle Knights, essentially you have to kill at least one large Knight a turn if you're going to be successful at defeating Knights. You don't really have to table a Knight player, but you do got to kill one or two of the big Knights to keep them from pushing in on your lines. Any army that can't do that, any army that fails to kill a Knight within the first 2 turns is destined to lose. A Knight player knows if he's going to win by turn 3. That just is what it is. Some people see that as a drawback. I just see it as the way they play. It just happens to be their niche as an army. They're relying on a skew, and they're relying on your opponent not being ready for him. I mean, it just is what it is. There's not really much you can say about it. You're going to show up to some events, and you're just going to get rocked. You're going to get that bad matchup, and it is going to rock you. Knights are very unforgiving when it comes to that. If you come up against a matchup, like the couple matches that I lost in these events, after the match, the person who I played would come up to me and be like, yeah, I was sick of losing the Knights, so this list was built specifically with Knights in mind. And I was like, okay, yeah, that makes sense. Because a lot of my matches would be, I would just steamroll people, and then I would run into one person that would just steamroll me back. And every time that happened, they told me, yeah, I built this list specifically for Knights. So yeah, Knights have clear weaknesses, and if people seek to build a list to exploit them, they will be exploited. There's not a whole lot you could do from that. So if you are looking to go undefeated in events, or if you're looking to really reach the high tables of really high level events, I wouldn't bring Chaos Knights or Imperial Knights. However, you never know. And you never know what the codexes are going to bring. So don't let that deter your enjoyment of the army. If this is what you enjoy playing, I mean, there's something to be said about only having six models. It's easy to transport. You get to get through every turn. I mean, every game I had was over well under the time limit. So I had plenty of time to go get snacks, go get drinks, shoot the shit, talk to people around the event. So it was great. Win or lose, you had plenty of free time. Movement phases go quick. It's nice. I personally very much enjoy playing low model count armies. So obviously I was drawn to Knights, and your mileage may vary. But like I said, don't let it detract you from playing Knights just because they may not be the most elite army. They are very, very solid middle tier. And like they've been pretty much every edition since they've released, I would consider them a gatekeeper army. If you can't beat Knights, you have no business at the top tables. So you have to build a list that can deal with them. And they'll just crush everybody beneath that level. So they keep the players that can't handle them down, and the players that can pass the gate usually end up rising to the top. It just is what it is. And that'll likely be them until the end of time, because I don't think GW really can balance Knights properly, and I don't think that's any fault of their own. I think it's mostly they've kind of cornered themselves as far as design space goes, because at the end of the day, you have to be able to balance the actual size of a knight by the lore, but you have to be able to balance that monstrosity of a knight against your regular tactical marine. And at the end of the day, we're on a D6 system. So essentially you're trying to establish the power of a knight somewhere on a D6 relative to, say, a tactical marine who's also on that D6. You can only go so high. So they're either going to feel too strong or they're not going to feel strong enough, unless GW decides to change their dice system to something else, which would allow a larger variance of power. I don't know. It likely will never happen, but that's a discussion for another day. One of the big things I noticed in my events was terrain. And I was lucky in a lot of my events. They actually had some true line of sight blocking terrain that actually could obscure one event even had a big enough piece that it obscured two knights. So there was times where I could deploy turn one, not expecting to get first turn, hide two knights, and be able to bring them out and do the business in my turn, being able to survive completely. It was nice. Terrain is great. When you can use it, it's very rare we'll ever get to use it. It's very rare that an event will have a terrain piece that can fully hide a knight, let alone two. So you can't really bank on that. We deal with terrain in reverse. We don't go seeking to maximize terrain. We go seeking to minimize it as knights. You need to know the terrain rules inside and out. If you don't have the rule book yet, and if you haven't looked at all the individual terrain rules and you want to play knights, you need to get the book. You need to look at those rules, because from top to bottom, you need to know each and every rule, because we don't benefit from any of the rules. We don't benefit from dense cover, obscuring, anything like that. Usually very rarely will we ever get cover saves of any kind. But there are particular things we can do with our movement and with our deployment that allow us to turn off certain pieces of cover, like touching a wall, towing into an area terrain. By using our movement to do these things, we can now see through the wall that we aren't supposed to see through. We can now see through the forest without the minus one to hit. Movement is probably the single most important phase for knights, next to the shooting phase, as far as the game is concerned, because we have to balance holding objectives and turning off terrain at the same time. There's been many times where I've set up my knight in such a way that I'd move him sideways, so one end of his base is capturing an objective and the other side is just barely touching a wall so I can shoot through it. You have to use that big base to your advantage, and you have to try to multitask. So you have to be able to cap objectives and get inside terrain that might be blocking your way at all times. It's very important. We can use that big base for a lot of things. We can use it to tag multiple multiple models, multiple units. We can use it to capture an objective and tow into a terrain piece. It's very, very interesting. And the one thing we can't forget now is that we can actually move and charge over models. So we have to be able to get that big base over them, sure. But tagging models is great for us, especially now that Fly can't just fall back and shoot. We can. We can go in. We can stomp on stuff. We can fall back. We can shoot. And we can charge back in. GW recently changed the super heavy rule to where you could fall back and charge. And then they put the shooting part of it in the rule book under Titanic. Just all Titanic models can fall back and shoot. And then the Knights had one where they can now fall back and charge. Why they separated the rule, I don't know. A lot of people were worried that they got rid of the fall back and shoot. They didn't. It's now just attached to Titanic models. So you don't have to worry about that, but you got to use that to your advantage. You got to know when to move, where to move, and what you're going to do once you get there. Every movement phase has to be efficient, or else you're going to fall behind in points, because we can't give up too many turns in order to get what we need to get done without falling too far behind. I usually say that you can give up the first turn as far as scoring secondaries go, but by turn two, you more or less need to be locked in and ready to start scoring massive amounts of points. You don't need to max your secondaries. Knights rarely will. There's certain secondaries we can't even take. So it'll be hard to pick secondaries a lot of the time. So I wouldn't worry too much about maxing them completely, which is why I say get rid of the first turn, because a lot of people think Knights can't hold objectives, but they're actually quite good at it with their large bases. Because what you can do is you can make all your Knights characters, any of the big ones you're using. I know I run a bunch of lists, but the one I tend to run the most usually has three big Knights and a couple Armigers. All three big Knights are characters through the stratagems. You give them relics and warlord traits and stuff. What this does, though, is it lets you park on an objective, and now you have heroic intervention. Anybody who tries to get within three of that objective, you can now heroically intervene into and stomp them out. So it does give you good defense against people trying to take your objectives, because you have such a massive base. So if you know exactly how to position your knight, you really have a good defense against people coming in trying to steal these objectives from you. I always put one of my knights, they always have Infernal Quest on them. I just like to have one guy count as 10 models, because you never know what could get into you. I mean, it's nice to have that fail safe, and plus it makes him a character anyway. We don't have a whole lot of stellar warlord traits once you throw Eager for the Kill on one of them, and then the other ones are just kind of eh. So throwing Infernal Quest on one has helped me quite a bit. It has helped me hold objectives, so it's something to think about. But as far as that's concerned, just being efficient with your movement and using the terrain to your opponent's disadvantage is the way you're going to have to win. Never bank on getting anything from cover yourself. Just know how to turn it off. Be aware of all your rules. Be aware of the terrain rules, and be aware of your movement. It's very important. The other thing I want to talk about is, let's see here. Okay. Yeah, it's mostly has to do with the points increases across all armies. Every army's gone up in points, and every army's got more or less smaller, except your ones that were already elite, like Custodes and Harlequins made out pretty good. Death Card made out okay. But with that, what that means is there's less models on the board now. There's less ways to load up on things that can be anti-knight. There's not as much wiggle room, so you can't go full bore anti-knight. If you do, you risk losing to infantry, which is still in the meta, so you can't go too far one way or the other. It kind of works to our advantage, because now we have a clearer picture of target priority. We have to pick which targets we need to get rid of first. In the first two turns, you have to be able to either completely or close to completely remove every unit that is the biggest threat to you and your army. There are things that you can leave alive and you can deal with later, even if it might not be the most efficient choice. Sometimes it's better to shoot what's in the back and then charge what's in the front. I know one of my games was against AdMech, and he had a lot of Cataphron Breachers, and they're really dangerous for his vehicles. They're only wounding on fives, but when they do get through, they're doing D6 damage, and they have a lot of shots, and he used a lot of them. He also had Dockabots. I mean, most people know what the Dockabots do when they're with Call, which he had. However, they're only one damage, strength six, wounding on fives. They're putting out a lot of shots, and they are plinking me for one damage at a time. And they did plink me quite a bit, but I knew from the get-go that the Cataphrons were going to do way more damage. So I made sure all of them had to die first, each and every one. And you have to pick your weapons. You have to pick your weapons versus your enemy. It has to be efficient because you need to ensure that all these enemies die in an efficient manner, because you don't really want to leave any around, because anything that can just take out a knight is going to be problematic for you. We can't afford losses. We only have six models at most, and that's if you're running war dogs and you're running pure knights. So every loss we have, we feel greatly. And we also give up a bunch of secondary points. So anytime we can minimize our losses is great. And it also plays into a lot of our secondaries, which I'll talk about later. So yeah, target priority is kind of big as a knight player. And you'll find that out as you keep playing in casual games. And even if you take them to events, every army's going to have things just stick out to you as need to die units. So just make sure you focus on those. And there won't be as many of them as there was last time. Armies shrunk. So it makes the decision a little easier what to do. And like I said before, oftentimes it's better for you to shoot what's in the back than it is for you to shoot what's right in front of you, because knights are very good in melee. Even if it's two gun knights and all they can do is stomp, we all know how good the stomps are. So shoot what's behind, charge what's in front, constantly move forward, capture objectives when you can, and get rid of all the priority targets. It's as easy as that. I like to fight from the back forward, so it's worked out quite well for me. Why bother taking longer to kill things than you need to when you can kill what's in the back and charge what's in the front? I mean, it just makes sense, really. I mean, I know I'm speaking to people who've played Warhammer before, so they I'm sure you understand the concept. But a lot of people will see something dangerous up front and want to put everything into it. But oftentimes our stomps can really handle the business on most things. So don't be afraid to shoot something that you can see in the back and then let melee mop up what's in the front, regardless of what your knight is loaded out with. You got to kind of be as efficient as you can with all your attacks. And you don't want to leave too much alive. So being able to get as many kills for your buck as possible is definitely the way forward. Now, after talking about those broad things, I kind of wanted to get into just some details and maybe some lists that I've run, some things I've seen success with, some things I like. I'm not going to do a full breakdown of everything in the book. I mean, if you want to know what Chaos Knights are all about, you can look them up on the 40K app. You can look at the Codex. You can look on Wikipedia. You can look online. I mean, there's plenty of resources out there. And this, if I was going to do an analysis of every single thing, this video would be like 10 hours long. The main things I want to talk about are kind of the units themselves, because I do use most of them. And some households and whatnot that I think work, and Warlord traits and relics that I think work. The big thing is the Castellan variant of our Tyrant went down in points. It's now only 10 points more than the Valiant variant, if I remember correctly. I know it's only 600 some odd points now. People have been down on the Dominus class knights for a while, since they got nerfed about a year ago, back when they were running the meta. I mean, the Chaos ones weren't, but the Imperial ones were. I think personally that they've made a comeback. I have gotten extremely good use out of my Night Tyrant with Plasma Decimator and Volcano Cannon. It just points at units and deletes them. I can put a different gun on a different unit and get a unit with each gun. It's been fantastic. I do think it's worth looking at now, especially definitely with the points drop. I mean, I could see why people were hesitant when it was over 700. Even I was hesitant. But now that it's 600, I think it's very good for its points. And it opens up a lot that you could do with it now, especially considering we can strategic reserves them, which leads me into the other one, the Valiant variant with the Conflagration Cannon. I ran him in the most recent event I went to because I wanted to try out a House Chimera list. It was a Conflagration Cannon Tyrant with a Desecrator leading three War Dogs and a Despoiler with Thermal and Avenger Gatling Cannon. It was an interesting list. I ended up strategic reserving the Tyrant twice. One time it worked to great effect. He came in off the side. This was the Admech game, and he started blowing away Cataphrons and then just marched up the board, just destroying everything it came in contact with, and it was great. The other game I did it in, I lost, and it was versus Sisters of Battle. They were well-equipped for Knights. Having him off the board just gave them less threat saturation, so they went all that one night, killed him pretty easily. And then I had just one knight and some War Dogs on the board, and my dice rolls were bad, so I couldn't really ever catch up. And by the time he came on, he had moved in such a way that I was doing work with him, and it took him a while to kill him, but I was never really getting at the juicy targets. So it was just a bad matchup there, bad rolling, and really I probably should have started him on the board. So again, deployment, movement are very important. You really got to know what you're playing before you make those decisions. The Valiant, I can't get behind after seeing its performance. It was very good, and I knew the Conflagration Cannon was going to be cool. But there's just something awkward about the Strength 7, even though I was using the Relic Flamer at the time for Chimera. There was just something awkward about the Strength 7. I was killing infantry fine, cool, but I had other things that could do that. And there were times where I needed to turn the Valiant on like toughness 8 targets, and it just wasn't getting through. So it was awkward. It felt awkward. It's only 10 points less than the Castellan at this point. I can't say there's really any reason to take it unless you just really can't find that 10 points anywhere in your list. I can't get behind it yet. I'm hoping it gets re-examined in the Codex eventually, because I think the points cost between the two aren't different enough to warrant its use. And I think it needs a little something. The Harpoon missed almost every time I used it too. So, and that's just a rule of law that any one-shot weapon has to miss every time you use it. That and the Shield Breaker missile, just complete whiff every time. So you gotta go with the number of shots on that one. Anybody who plays Chaos Knights knows Despoilers are good. I happen to be using a Thermal and Avenger Despoiler, but I've often used double Thermal, double Avenger. We know what they do. It's more in how they're used. I didn't really like the setup I had, the Avenger and the Thermal. And that's because I was running Iconoclast, and I'm going to get into this when I talk about Iconoclast and Infernal, but I didn't have the points to run double Avenger, and I didn't know what to fill the gap in if I went double Thermal. So I was like, I'll try it. I kind of want to have a little more anti-tank and something to shoot at Marine squads. It ended up not working well for me. Again, the Sisters of Battle matchup I had on Sunday was pretty bad. He ignored AP minus 2, and pretty much all my quality weapons in that list were AP 2 or less. So it's like I said, people who build for you are going to beat you hard, and it's just is what it is. It is what happened. The Valiant didn't perform. The spoiler didn't perform. The Avenger Gatling cannon couldn't get through. And the thermal cannon rolled one shot twice in two shooting phases before being destroyed. So it was one of those games. I personally would definitely double up on one gun. Another list I'm working on has two despoilers, one double Avenger, one double thermal. It's the way I like to do it. I can see merit to mixing your weapons, but I would only do that if I was going infernal. And like I said, I'm going to talk about that and why in a second. The other nut I ran was the Desecrator. And as much as I want the Desecrator to be good, he is hot garbage. And it's unfortunate because the Daimonis Relic seems like a cool gun. And it seems like it should be super powerful, but it's not. It doesn't even look super powerful on paper, but it feels like it should be. It's supposed to be some big night-busting weapon. But really, even with the Relic, it's only 3 shots at Ballistic Skill 3. So you're really only going to wound with 2. You're going to hit with 2. You're maybe going to wound with 2. More than likely, you're going to roll a 1 in there and only wound with 1. And then whatever you're shooting at likely has an invuln, and they're going to pass it. I mean, more often than not, the Laser Destructor did nothing. And you almost feel, especially if you're running him along with War Dogs, you feel like you're not utilizing him properly unless you're keeping him with the War Dogs. But if he's staying with the War Dogs, then he's not really being where he needs to be, and he's not spreading out on the board to help you capture more objectives. It's kind of too much of your list clumped together, and I don't think Knights can really afford that. So if you want to run War Dogs, just run them by themselves. He was not worth the reroll ones to hit. More often than not, I didn't even roll ones. I used 2 Thermal Spear War Dogs and 1 Autocannon one. And for the couple ones I might have rerolled, it wasn't worth giving up 405 points in my list. Yeah, it was something I wanted to test. I didn't like it. He would almost be better if you just gave him the Gauntlet of Ascension and kept him with the crappy version of the gun, the even worse version of the gun, and just ran him like that and rushed him into combat. But at that point, you might as well just take a Rampager or a Melee Despoiler. The Melee Despoiler is finding himself into my next list with the Gauntlet of Ascension because it's just a much better relic. And that knight can actually just focus on doing what it needs to do. The Desecrator is just too all over the place. You want to do too much with it. It's unfortunate because the Desecrator could be good, and I feel like if his reroll aura applied to all knights, it might be a lot better. But he just doesn't quite get there for me. He won't be making it into my other list. So unfortunately, he's going to go back on the shelf. We all knew that as Chaos Knight players. It's unfortunate, but he's just not that great right now. Hopefully they revisit him in the Codex when it eventually comes out. His relic and his regular gun could use a look. Because right now he just doesn't bring enough to the table. Even at 405 points, it's just, there's so much more I could do with those points than that, whatever that is. It would also help if he was... Really, I think he should just be a character knight and just have weapon skill, ballistic skill 2 like the melee knight does, and give the reroll 1 Zora. Keep the crappy gun. He could still have the crappy gun and the fist or the chain sword. But I mean, it is what it is. Right now he's just bad, and I think that, yeah, going to Ballistic Skill 2, Weapon Skill 2 might actually be good for him. But I don't know, maybe that would be overpowered. I don't think so. It's only a 3-shot gun if you take the relic. So who cares if he's at least actually hitting things with it? I mean, I think it's the least they could do. But I already talked about the despoiler, the War Dogs. The thermal Spear and Chain Cleaver War Dogs actually did some good work for me. I enjoyed them in the list, and I think I might actually run 3 if I run War Dogs. I might be leaning towards a list that just runs 4 big knights, but I don't know yet. They were good. I mean, having them in a pinch to just throw some pot melta shots at tough targets was nice. And they were actually pretty good in melee. I mean, the opponent was so busy trying to deal with the big knights that the little guys were able to get there into melee. And I mean, not for nothing against anything but Primaris right now. I mean, two wound update didn't happen yet for everything else. But against anything that's one wound, they get in. They get, as long as you're Iconoclast, they get 10 attacks at AP 3, damage 1. I mean, that can do the work. I mean, against anybody but two wound targets, I mean, it's really good. And even against two wound targets, I mean, you're still, on average, you're still killing four or five Primaris, I mean, which is a squad most of the time. So yeah, they really didn't do bad for me at all. I rather enjoyed using them. They're fast, they can get to objectives, they could clear objectives with their melee. The only problem is I don't usually make them characters, so it's not like they can heroically intervene, but I don't really need them for that. The one thing that's nice about them is they come down as a squad and then separate. So that could come in if you ever use House Comentus and the stratagem for deep striking war dogs. You could deep strike the whole unit for, I think, one or two CP. I think it's only one. So that's three war dogs you get to outflank for one CP, which is nice. And then they could separate and go their own ways and get their own objectives. I really liked them. The D3 shots is kind of swingy, but this is going to be rectified with something I'm going to talk about a little later. Yeah, I just think they're a solid unit, and I do think they complement knight lists well. I actually like them better than the autocannon ones at this point, because I've also run an autocannon war dog, and I have some lists where I actually run three autocannon war dogs instead. The autocannon war dog didn't do much in my games. I mean, he killed a few things here and there. He did what he had to do. I mean, I don't think he died in any of the games. He was ignored for the most part. He threw around his shots. I'm sure he made his points back in every game, but he didn't really wow me. I mean, there's something to be said about that, though. I mean, the average Joe that just does his job, does it well enough. I mean, he wasn't bad by any means. If you enjoy running autocannon war dogs, I mean, they do the job. I mean, strength 7, AP minus 1. Flat three damage. I mean, flat three damage, you can't really scoff at that. I mean, it's going to wipe out most things. I think aggressors are three wounds. So being able to take out aggressors just one at a time is nice. I mean, yeah. And it's good for planking off a couple wounds off vehicles, especially light vehicles. I mean, if you're going against Jukari or anything with toughness 6, toughness 7 vehicles, I mean, you're killing a Venom, you know, every two shots they get through. I mean, you're killing a Venom, so they're good. I mean, they definitely do what you want them to do. And I mean, if you're playing a more aggressive game with your big knights, the little ones, the autocannon guys can sit back and hold home objectives while still throwing long-range firepower. So I definitely think they have a place. I mean, I was particularly wowed by my thermal spear ones, but it's not to say that the autocannon ones are bad. They just, in the games I've played with them, they just did their job and nothing more. They didn't excel, which is fine. I mean, there are going to be times where they will excel. So your mileage may vary on that, but either option is going to be good. Also, for what it's worth, Lightning Lock War Dog Moraxes are phenomenal. I don't actually own any, so I wasn't able to bring them to my events, but I did proxy some in some practice games at the shop, and they were absolutely phenomenal. Being able to punch through that many shots on infantry is brutal, and it just mows down hordes. So I do still think, like 8th, the War Dog Moirax with Lightning Locks are probably the best War Dog you can run, and they do complement your big knights well in giving you a lot of that infantry shredding firepower that you might be missing if you're not taking a double Avenger Knight. I do think they complement us the best, but really, no matter what war dog you use, as long as you tailor your list right, any of them are useful. So by all means, choose whichever one and go from there. Besides that, really the only thing I didn't talk about yet was the Rampager. I didn't use the Rampager recently. However, I did use them in a list of mine in an event about a month ago. And I like the Rampager a lot. He didn't make the list this time because I wanted to try some new things. But the Rampager is really good. And I like to make him a Dreadblade. It's kind of risky. But I the household I was using at the time didn't really benefit him, so I saw no reason not to. And I like to give him the rune of Nocte Grah for the 5-up invuln in melee. And that's actually pretty important, and it's good. Because when you're rushing him into melee like that, you can put him on targets that would otherwise kill him. Because Rotate Ion Shields doesn't say you only can use it in the shooting phase. You can use it in any phase. And it does work in the fight phase with the rune. So if you could throw him into something beefy, like, I don't know, Wolfen with Thunder Hammers, and he will live where otherwise he might not, because now he's got a 4-up invuln. Would I normally do that willingly? No, but it definitely helps him with getting into the hard targets that you might not otherwise run a knight into. It's just really nice having that option to have a knight that's not, because melee is our biggest weakness. Anything that gets in on knights in melee is usually going to wreck them if they have enough AP, because it just goes right through our invuln. And we only have a 3-up base save for whatever reason. But yeah, the rune I think is a very valid choice on him. And I like making him a Dreadblade because I like having access to the extra CP you can get from one of the packs. You get Demonic Vigor, which allows him even more movement if you roll good. And if you roll a 4 or 5, I think you get +1 weapon skill, which usually isn't relevant on a Rampager because he's hitting on 2s anyway. But if somebody has -1 to hit, or you decide you want to use the fist, you're still hitting on 2s. So it's pretty nice. Yeah, I can't really complain about that. Most of the time I want to roll a 1, 2, or 3 so I get the extra move. But I make him a Dreadblade mostly for the rune. The rest of the stuff is just a cherry on top. And then I'll usually give him the Warlord trait, Eager for the Kill, to make him even faster. And the Quicksilver Throne of Slaanesh to make him even faster. So he's usually making turn 1 charges. Hopefully he gets into something good. With armies being smaller now and screens having to stay closer together, it's actually kind of easy for him to get into something juicy on turn 1. Like I said, your mileage may vary, but I think the Rampager or the Knight Despoiler with both melee weapons is a very valid pick, where it might not have been before. Really, besides the Desecrator, there's not really anything in our book that's inherently bad. I think depending on your build, you can really get away with using anything. I guess I'll get into the households, because I'll start broad and then narrow it down. You got Infernal and you got Iconoclast. If you're taking Iconoclast, your melee knights get even better. You get an extra point of CP and you get an extra attack, which is nice. Iconoclast is really great, though, for the shooty knights, because it makes your stomps AP -3 too, which is pretty nice. And you get that extra attack, so that's 3 more stomps. It's pretty great. I mean, you get the vows, Vow of Dominance, can only be wounded on 4s. Vow of the Beast Slayer can wound monsters and vehicles, I believe. You can reroll 1s to wound. And Vow of Carnage, for every so many models you kill. I forget the exact number. I want to say it might be 20. I don't know. I don't think it's that many. But for every so many models you kill, you get an extra attack. All of them are valid. The problem with them now, and the problem we run into with 9th edition, is our vows used to be great at tailoring our lists to our opponent. We used to be able to check out who we're playing against and use a vow relevant to that opponent. Now, if you're entering an event, the vows have to be used on your list. They have to be set. That being said, I think that takes away from Iconoclast a little bit, and I know Iconoclast has been the fan favorite for a while, and it's my favorite too. I tend to use Iconoclast most of the time, but I think that actually narrows the gap between Iconoclast and Infernal a little bit, because having to commit the CP to those vows when they might not be relevant actually really hurts. And I didn't realize it until my one event when I faced Sisters and Death Guard in two of my matches. Actually, in all the matches, because the AdMech guy didn't have anything over strength 6, really. He was using Breachers and Cataphrons. So he was wounding me on 5s regardless. And then the Sisters player and the Death Guard player didn't have anything over strength 8. So I was being wounded on 4s regardless, but I took Vow of Dominance anyway because I was expecting a heavy Marine meta or things with las cannons. I was just expecting strength 9 somewhere. And it actually, I went the whole day without really ever using Vow of Dominance. So that was 2 CP completely wasted that I had to spend every game of the event. And that's definitely 2 CP that I wish I could have had back some games to use on other things. So that's definitely a point against Iconoclast now. They have the other benefit where if something runs near you, one more thing flees. It's only semi-relevant now because only one model flees no matter what, and you take combat attrition. So, and that's probably going to get changed to something else, but right now it's just eh. So Iconoclast really doesn't excite me as much anymore as it used to. I'm still running it, but that's mostly just because of the specific relic, which is Veil of Medrengard, the 4+ The 4+ invuln is nice. I mean, it's really nice to have that 4+ invuln on something, especially since I like to run Tyrants. It costs 3 CP to rotate Ion Shields on them. So, really, I've been taking Iconoclast just for that relic. And I want to try events with Infernal so bad, but I'm so afraid to give up that relic. And I think that's bad. That's actually a design flaw in the Codex, I think. I don't think any relic should be so good that you're afraid to try other things because the one is just so good. I mean, it's hard to give up a free 4+ invuln all game on a Tyrant. You figure any game with Knights is going to go 5 turns most of the time because they play fast enough. That's 15 CP just to rotate Ion Shields on him every turn. So that's not really feasible. So it's tough. It's hard to want to get rid of that relic. Yeah, it just is what it is. I mean, It's the biggest thing Iconoclast has going for it, and there's not really much to be had. The Warlord trait, I usually don't run Warlord traits on my Tyrants, but if I do, I'll usually slap the Infernal Quest on them. There's no real Iconoclast-specific Warlord traits to talk about. They come in when we talk about the specific houses, which we'll get to in a minute. But I just want to touch on Infernal. I don't have as much experience with Infernal, unfortunately. However, I did play a lot of casual games and practice games with Infernal when I'm trying it out. And I honestly think a lot of the Knight community is sleeping on Infernal Knights because they're afraid to give up the Veil or the Vows, which I don't think are as useful anymore. And let me tell you why. A lot of the meta seems to be Strength 8 right now. There's a lot of Death Guard, and there's a lot of Melta in the meta with Eradicators, Salamanders, and whatnot. And it's only probably going to exacerbate when multi-Meltas get upgraded. So going to Toughness 9, having the ability to go to Toughness 9 is going to be huge. To make all those things wound on 5s is going to be really good. It might actually even be better than Vow of Dominance now because it's something you could do. You can choose what you want to do during the game as far as your Demonic Surge goes. So there's definitely something to be said about Infernal now. And even though you give up the Veil of Medrengard, you do get the Blasphemous Edgen, which admittedly is nowhere near as good. And it's not even as good as its sort of counterpart on the Loyalist side. I'm fairly certain that they just get a stratagem that lets you fight at full bracket. Blasphemous Engine lets you double your wounds for the when consulting your bracket, which isn't that good, I understand, but it will keep your knight fighting longer at full capacity, which there's something to be said about that. Again, I don't think it's not the Veil, but it's good enough that I think when combined with Toughness 9, it might actually edge it out, and you might not really care about not rotating your ion shields on your Tyrant, because not enough stuff is going to go through. It's something I'm going to need to play with a little more to see how much damage they actually end up taking with these things, you know, wounding on fives. I just think it's worth it. I mean, it kind of goes back to what I was talking about the Valiant too. I think the Valiant is the Valiant Tyrant. He's somebody who can thrive in Infernal, because juicing that Conflagration Cannon up to Strength 8 gets rid of the awkwardness of Strength 7. Now that that Conflag Cannon is Strength 8, it's now wounding Marines on 2s, it's wounding most vehicles on 3s, and it's wounding your heavy stuff on 4s, which is great. You can't really scoff at that. I mean, it becomes... Not only does it become Strength 8, but it becomes Damage 3. If you happen to go Commentus and take their Warlord trait, which lets you juice up a weapon for one turn in a game and lets you reroll all hits and wounds. The hits don't matter for the Conflagration Cannon, obviously, but now you've just juiced that Flamer up to Strength 9. Or not Strength 9, it stays Strength 8, but it goes up to Damage 4. So that's a dead Centurion per wound that goes through at AP minus 2. Throw the Commentus Relic on him. 18 inches, you pick a unit, and that unit takes one extra AP on your weapon. Now that Flamer's AP 3. So, and your Flamer's in 18-inch range anyway, so you know you're in range. There's something good about that. I mean, the Conflagration Cannon variant aside, I mean, it's amazing on the Castellan variant, and this is why I think the Castellan variant is definitely superior, because it's good no matter what. You juice up the Plasma Decimator, now that thing is Strength 9, Damage 3 when you overcharge. That's just really good. 2d6 shots at Strength 9, AP 3, Damage 3. I'll take that. I'll take that any day of the week. And you can also choose to just make him toughness 9 if you don't need the power right away. And it's good, too, because it's relevant for my Rampager. Because the other Demonic Surge you could do is give him more speed. Make him even faster. So he'll definitely be getting anywhere he needs to go turn 1. It's really good. I think people are sleeping on Infernal, and I think I might actually put it to the test the next event I go to. I'm definitely going to want to try Infernal, because I do think there's something there that can be done. Just juicing up a Tyrant like that is just really good, and I don't think giving up all that just so I can have a 4-up Invuln is good. I mean, you're already playing Mono Knights. You're flying by the seat of your pants anyway. You might as well just YOLO, do as much damage as you can. If you kill everything, nothing can kill you back. You won't need the 4-up Invuln. So, I mean, it's a full bore SKU army anyway. You might as well just go head on into it and not try to be too defensive. It's just really good. And I mean, that's the other reason why I have a Despoiler sitting around that's got a Thermal and an Avenger. Because splitting the weapons like that is beneficial for Infernal armies. Because now you can juice the Avenger Gatling Cannon and just shoot the Thermal Cannon. Because the Thermal Cannon doesn't really get much from Demonic Surge. Whereas the Avenger Gatling Cannon does. It goes up to Strength 7, Damage 3, which is phenomenal. Now it's wounding light vehicles on 4s or 3s and doing flat 3 damage per shot. It's great. And the difference is, if you have 2 Avenger Gatling Cannons on one night and 2 Thermals on one night, and you go in Infernal, you're kind of wasting it because you can only juice one weapon. Now you have 2 juiced Avenger Cannons going into something. So that's 24 shots at Strength 7, AP 2, Damage 3. Can't beat that. I really like it. And I think that's actually what I'm going to do next time. I'm going to run 2 Despoilers with mixed loadouts like that and a Plasma Decimator Tyrant, and I'll probably fill the rest of the points with either a Despoiler Melee or War Dogs. I haven't decided yet. I might just try the Fortnite approach, but we'll see. The good thing about Iconoclast and Infernal is if you're a Dreadblade, you still get it. So even if I make my melee knight a Dreadblade, he still gets the benefits of whichever side I choose. So again, like I keep saying, your mileage may vary. Depending on your playstyle, pick whatever you want. There's certain households that are linked to each one. So just make sure that the household you like falls under that umbrella and you enjoy the playstyle, and you should be good to go. There's merits to both of them, but I do think people are sleeping on Infernal right now, and I think it might actually be the way to go against popular opinion. So take that for what it's worth. Comment on the video. Tell me what you think. I'd love to hear your thoughts because I very well could be wrong. I play Chaos Knights, but I play a lot of things. So my views are all over the place. So again, by all means, I'm not here pretending to be an expert or anything, just sharing my thoughts and sharing what I have seen work. The Tyrant works. He's done amazing work for me. And the Despoilers just work. And having one guy that can just run up the field is great. So those are the things I know work. So try them out as you will. Now, when we get into households, I'll go into the main ones I've tried. From Iconoclast, I've tried Chimere. I mentioned that already. I mostly just tried it because I wanted to try out the Relic Flamer. And it's house tactic, I guess you could call it, is you reroll ones to wound, excluding your Titanic feat. You just reroll ones to wound, I believe. So because it doesn't apply to the feat, really stinks. Because there wasn't often times where I was fighting with anything but the feet. It was kind of an irrelevant trait for my list. I just really wanted to use the Flamer. And I wanted to be Iconoclast at the time. But I will tell you, the Flamer seemed nice on paper. But it still was at that awkward strength 7 area where I kind of wanted to aim it at certain things that it just wasn't suited for. It bumps the damage up to damage 3. And it makes it assault, which is nice, but it never really came up in the game. Moving 10 inches and having an 18-inch range already put him in range of things that I needed. So I never really had to advance him. And like I said, 2 of the games, I deep struck my Conflagration Cannon Tyrant, or outflanked him, rather. So I never really had to advance. It wasn't worth it. Being Iconoclast was nice. Getting the perks from that was good. But I wished through the whole event that I'd gone with a custom household. Just is what it is. Just Chimera didn't really wow me. Herpetrax didn't wow me. People are drawn to the plus wounds because of the simplicity of it. And I can understand that. But you need to understand that anything that can kill a 24 wound knight can just as easily kill a 26 wound knight. So don't get drawn into the trap, because it's very much a trap pick. It's not really doing much for you. The Warlord trait is cool when it works, but it's a 50-50 shot. On a 4-up, the knight gets back up once it's destroyed, if it doesn't blow up. There's two different things you have to get through before you can even use this Warlord trait. You have to not blow up, which you can't reroll anymore. And you have to roll a 4-up. So that's 2 different times your Warlord trait could just do nothing. To be honest, because I put so little stock in that household, I don't even really know what the relic is. I know it's the Crown of Jadothra, but I don't really know what it does. I'm going to look it up right now just for sake of me knowing it. Crown of Jadothra. House Herpetrax model only. We're resolving an attack with a melee weapon against the model with this relic. Subtract 1 from the hit roll. So that's okay. I mean, subtracting 1 from the hit roll is whatever. I mean, anything that's going into a knight, though, anything that people feel confident enough to throw into a knight in melee likely doesn't care about a -1 to hit, or they're getting a +1 to hit from something anyway, or they're marines and they're re-rolling everything. Just that relic alone is not enough to take Herpetrax. I mean, I know I did that with Chimere, so I'm kind of being hypocritical right now, but yeah, it's just at least Chimera was good for my Chain Cleaver War Dogs because they fought with their Chain Cleavers. So them rerolling ones to wound did come up, and it happened often, and it was nice. So that was definitely nice. Chimera's Warlord trait I didn't even use. Their Warlord trait is a morale debuff, so forget about that. The other one, though, that I'm tempted to try when I eventually go back to Iconoclast is going to be Lucaris. I think Lucaris might be the best household of the Iconoclast ones. Its trait is applicable to everything. It's just a flat plus one to hit when you charge. That's great. It doesn't exclude Titanic Feet, so when your gun knights go in and they want to stomp, they're now stomping on twos. That's pretty great. I will never say no to that one. The relic is okay. I do run tyrants, so having the relic twin meltas is cool. Bumps them up to strength 9. Great. I probably wouldn't waste a slot on them, but they're there and they're not terrible. The warlord trait is kind of a tricky one for me. It's nice because you could kind of double up on fighting first with your knights. I tend to use the Quicksilver Throne of Slaanesh on my melee knights because it also gives the movement buff. So I often find that I don't need the warlord trait, but if you put it on something like a gun knight, he's now fighting first. Now he has a little bit of protection from things that might try to charge him to stop him from shooting or try to wreck him in combat. I mean, so it is nice. It's a nice warlord trait to have. So all around, Lucaris has a bunch of things that are just always going to be useful in some regard. So something to look forward to. I would try Lucaris if you get a chance. If you do have success with them, please let me know in the comments. I'd love to hear about it because I'm very curious about how they play out. I want to play them next when I go back to Iconoclast. But I'm probably going to do a little bit of time in Infernal, because I do want to test those. And moving over into Infernal, the one household I really want to try from Infernal is Vextrix. Their household trait is also very good. It's more or less like a Salamander reroll. They can reroll one hit and one wound roll per unit. Because you only got 6 or so units, you're not getting a whole lot of mileage out of it, but you are getting, if you're running stuff like volcano cannons and you get that occasional one to wound, being able to reroll that is nice. Being able to reroll random hits here or there is nice. Yeah, it's pretty good. And their stratagem is situational but also very useful. Their stratagem just essentially lets you ignore hit modifiers, which is pretty great, because then you don't have to waste a relic slot on the Helm of Warp site. You just pay a CP if you feel you need it, which is actually kind of nice because you could go a whole event and not face anything like flyers with minus one to hit. They could just be custodies and just roll up with you, you know, straight up, or, you know, marines with not a whole lot of minus one to hits on them. I mean, outside of Raven Guard or something, just could be anything, but being able to not have to commit to a relic and just use the stratagem when you need it is nice. Besides that, their relic is pretty cool. It's a movement buff, but I believe it makes you explode easier. Yeah, it adds 1 to the move characteristic of a model. In addition, add 1 to the damage characteristic of the Reaper Chainsword or Thunderstrike Gauntlet. That part's kind of irrelevant because it's already flat damage 6. I mean, making it flat damage 7, I mean, I don't really know what that's going to do for you. But, hey, I mean, it's more damage. And when a model with the relic is destroyed, add 1 to any dice to see if it explodes. So that's cool. I mean, if you throw it on a melee knight and just run them into the enemy, he'll be easier. He will hit harder and he will be faster. And when he dies, he can explode on everything. So, it's not a relic I would really break down the door for, but it's definitely not one that's useless. It's a lot better than some of the other ones in here. So it's pretty good. And the warlord trait, I don't remember either, but I really want to look it up. I want to say it's not that one because that's Commentus. I'm going to talk about them. Oh, Favorite of the Dark Mechanicum. Yes, I do know this one because this is actually another reason why I like this house. Anybody who's Vextrix at the start of the movement phase, you just regain one lost wound. Doesn't seem like a lot, but that's actually really awesome considering as Infernal, you're hurting yourself every turn for Demonic Surge. So, I like it. I mean, I would throw that on my, I would throw that Warlord trait on my Castellan at that point. And then I'm negating some of the damage he's taking by juicing his Plasma Decimator. So I think there's a lot to be said about Vextrix. And Vextrix is also good with the Valiant variant of the Tyrant. Because being able to reroll just the Harpoon will help a lot. Because the Harpoon's the only thing that never wants to hit. So, I mean, the Conflagration Cannon auto-hit, so you'll never need to use your hit on that. You just use it on the Harpoon every time you use it. And it's great. You got two shots at trying to Harpoon something. And if you happen to not wound, you get another shot at that too. Just save your rerolls for that. You might actually get that thing through. I mean, it's not particularly impressive. It does do 10 damage plus D3 mortal wounds if you shoot it into a vehicle. But, I mean, at the end of the day, you could probably do 10 wounds to a Rhino or something with the Plasma Decimator too. So it's just cool to be able to say Harpoon something. And Vextrix will help make that happen. The other Infernal household I want to talk about, and it's not really one that I think is particularly good, I just kind of like it because it's cheeky, is Commentus. And the reason I like it is for two reasons. I really like their Warlord trait because it synergizes really well with Demonic Surge. Because you could take something like a Plasma Decimator and make it damage 4, which is awesome. The Warlord trait is you essentially, once a game, you choose a weapon, and that weapon gains plus one damage, and you reroll all your hits and wounds. So, that's disgusting. It's a shame you can't use it. It's a shame it's not somewhere else, and it's attached to Commentus, because the rest of their thing isn't really that wowing to me. I mean, their relic is the Demonic Shrike, so that's, you pick something with an 18 and they take an extra armor penetration. It is what it is. And their, I believe their household bonds are, I think they ignore wounds, wound rolls of 5 up in the psychic phase. So they get a 5 up shrug versus psychic mortal wounds. And they add 1 to their attacks characteristic when it, resolving an attack made with a melee weapon, and add 1 to the hit roll when a model has lost half or more of its wounds. So for 2/3 of your trait, you have to lose a bunch of wounds first in order to use it. I mean, it's nice because it kind of makes you live longer, kind of offsets being bracketed, but I mean, you're kind of trying to kill things as fast as you can and not get bracketed anyway. And you're not always going to have, it's not really always going to come into play. So, I mean, I would rather a trait that's just always in play and always constant. Like Vextrix is always doing something. Lucaris is not always going to be doing its thing, but it's relevant to all your knights. It's just not relevant enough for me, but I do really like the Warlord trait, and I like the fact that it's under Infernal, because it just makes for something really fun. It makes for a fun Conflagration Cannon. A damage 4 Conflagration Cannon, or a damage 4 Plasma Decimator is always good in my book. Being able to soup up Avenger Gatling Cannons is great, if you go that route. It's just, it's a fun house. It's not one I'm going to try in events. Although, the stratagem, which lets you outflank war dogs, if you have a list that's heavy in war dogs, you might consider taking Commentus to events. Because being able to deep strike just 3 war dogs for 1 CP, and I'm fairly sure it's only 1 CP, is pretty good. I mean, there's not a whole lot that will survive a charge from 3 Chain Reaper War Dogs. So yeah, Encircling Hounds, yeah, 1 CP. So if you were going to do that through strategic reserves, I think it would cost you something like 3. I think it would cost 3 CP. So being able to do it for 1 CP is great, because they come down as a unit and then they split up. So you pay 1 CP for all 3. Yeah, so if you're planning on running a lot of War Dogs, Comensis could be the way to go for you, because you can really stretch the board that way. So maybe I'm sleeping on it. Maybe I'm sleeping on Comensis. Maybe I should give it a try. I do have 6 War Dogs, so I could give it a try. And even if you're only using 3, I mean, I could see some merit in outflanking 3 War Dogs once your opponent pushes up a little bit, or caving in a side with them. If your opponent goes after, because usually they're focusing one knight, so they tend to kind of gravitate towards what they're focusing towards. It could open up some room to outflank 3 of them on the other side of the board, and then you could start pushing in from that side and taking those objectives. So definitely something to think about. Without War Dogs, I wouldn't take it, because I just don't feel the Warlord traits enough. But with them, if that's your play style, I mean, I can definitely see merit. So again, if anybody runs War Dog heavy lists and wants to tell me how it went for them, then maybe share their list, leave it in the comment below. I'd love to see it. The last thing I want to talk about is our custom households. And this is kind of where I'm currently at with the army. My most competitive lists are custom households. And there's 2, well, technically 3, that are better than all the rest in my experience. And that would be Endless Torment, which is the one I use the most, and Pinpoint Cruelty, and Infamous Heredity. The Pinpoint Cruelty and Infamous Heredity combo pretty much is kind of like a bastardized Vextrix, where you get to reroll 1 hit roll a turn, and you get to reroll a damage roll. That's amazing if you're running a lot of thermal on your knights, especially if you're running mixed loadouts like I tend to do. So each knight on his thermal cannon, if he gets, you know, some damage rolls through and you happen to roll low, all those thermal cannons get to reroll 1 of those damage dice. I don't know how many times I've wounded with a thermal cannon and rolled a 1 for damage. So being able to reroll anything is great. And I definitely think it's worth it. I mean, with the units that I think are the best in our army, I think the Castellan at its point cost should be in all our lists. Being able to reroll the damage rolls on the Volcano Lance is even good. Even though it's 3d3, I mean, you roll a 1 and then you can roll it into a 5. You get an extra couple points of damage there. The Thermal Cannon is really where it shines. And if you happen to run the Desecrator, it can help there as well. But the reason why I don't put that ahead of Endless Torment is Endless Torment is applicable to literally every single knight in our book, barring the melee only ones. I'll use the Castellan again because he's my favorite unit and I get the most work done out of him. It's been FAQ'd now that Endless Torment works on every weapon. So you've got a Castellan now, and I'll even make him Infernal. You roll 2d6 shots for the Plasma Decimator, you can reroll 1 of the dice. You roll d6 shots for the Volcano Lance, and you can reroll that dice if it's low. You roll 2d6 per Siegebreaker Cannon, you can reroll 1 of those dice in each set. So out of the 4 dice, you can reroll 2 of them. Yeah. I mean, just on him alone, you could see how much value you get out of that. I mean, you think about over the term of a game without that household, how many shots you're probably missing out on. It just gives you so much more bang for your buck than any other household trait in the book. I mean, just going from 1 to 3 Volcano Lance shots, I mean, that's a significant increase in damage. More, and I believe the math is way above being able to reroll your damage with Pinpoint Cruelty. Being able to reroll a 1 on a thermal cannon into a 5 or a 6, or even just a 3 or a 4, just does so much more for you, especially when you're linked up with something like again, I used Castellan a lot, but say you use the Codex stratagem, Trail of Destruction, you're rerolling all your hit rolls. Now you've maximized all those shots. I mean, it would suck to choose a knight to shoot, spend 2 CP on that stratagem, and then roll low for all your shot rolls. If you have a double thermal knight and he rolls snake eyes for his shots, okay, great. You get to reroll 2 of those shots. Now you could take both those ones, you could reroll them both, and even if you just end up with the average of 7, I mean, that's such a significant damage boost to just being able to reroll 1 hit and 1 damage. And that's per unit for those two. Endless Torment works on every weapon. So, I mean, unless you're running a lot of melee knights or a lot of knights that just don't have variable shot weapons, which there aren't many. Most of our best builds are variable shot weapons. I can't see you going wrong with Endless Torment. It's just too good. There's too many times where I've rerolled a 1 into a 6 on the Volcano Lance, so just absolutely vaporize something. Yeah, I mean, it's by and far the best household in the book, in my opinion. And I think it would be, if you see a truly meta competitive knight list somewhere, that's going to be the household, because I just don't see anything from the other houses that really warrants me giving up the shots. Because the few times I fooled around with Vextrix, the few times I fooled around with Chimere, I've always rolled my shots wishing I was a custom household within this torment. Throughout my whole last event, I wished I was that household. There was never a time where I wished I wasn't. It's always been relevant, and it's always helped me immensely. I mean, every once in a while, you'll reroll a 1 into a 1, but that happened way less than just, you know, being stuck with a 1 on a thermal cannon with a subpar household. So take that for what it's worth. If you're running a lot of knights that have variable shot weapons, there is no household in the book that will do better for you than Endless Torment. It's good on the thermal spear war dogs. It's good on the Castellan. It's good on the Valiant. It's good on thermal despoilers. I mean, there's really not much else to be said about it. I mean, yeah. I mean, if you happen to use the Desecrator without the Relic Gun, it's good for that. It's good on autocannon war dogs too, because each autocannon is 2d3 shots, so you can always reroll one of those. I actually got a lot of mileage out of them with the Endless Torment, because I would have a 5 and a 1. I'd be able to roll that 1 into another 5 or 6. So I went from 4 shots to 6 shots. I mean, assuming everything goes through, that's an extra 6 damage. So there's just so much mileage. We have to get the most out of every single knight at the end of the day. Every knight has to pull its weight, and anything that can get rid of the variance in our best weapons is easily going to be the way to go. And it's a shame, and I think it's a problem with our book, like I mentioned earlier, that there are options that are just clear winners, and it makes everything else losers. And I hope that's something they look at in the future when we get to our codex and a few more things kind of jump out and make some choices. Because right now, I can see what they tried to do with some of the houses in Engine War. There were often times where I would look at warlord traits or stratagems and I'd be like, oh man, I wish it was in such and such a household because it would have went well with this. They were trying to make you make choices, and I could tell that it was forced. I could tell they jumbled things up to force you to force all the households to have something good and something bad, so nothing was a clear winner, but you could tell it was forced. And they purposely made things bad, in my opinion, to achieve this, instead of just making everything equally good and viable. So you, no matter what your playstyle was, there was a household for you. Because there are so many times where certain parts of one household fit my playstyle better, but the relic from another household fits into that playstyle better. So it was something that always just felt awkward to me about knights. But it just comes with the territory, I guess. Hopefully it gets rectified and we get a few more viable options, because I don't want to be kind of steered one way or another. The one thing I'm happy about is that I do honestly believe I'm sleeping on Infernal. I've been sleeping on Infernal, and I think everybody else is too. So it'll be interesting to get out and really crack at that and see how that goes. I'll be sure to do a follow-up after I have a chance to really grind with that. Iconoclast Knights can do well. I've been doing well. So if you're playing Iconoclast Knights, keep going. Learn your movement, learn your terrain rules, and you'll do perfectly fine. They do a lot of cool things. If you're playing Infernal Knights, let me know how it's been. I think they might have a higher ceiling and a lower floor. So you could just end up killing yourself a bunch and really get nowhere and feel frustrated. Or you could find the sweet spot and just do something amazing. So hopefully I'm right and there's a higher ceiling there. So maybe I can do even better in my next event. We'll see how it goes. But in the meantime, I'll be sure to keep you guys posted about anything that happens with me in games and events. If you're part of the Chaos Knights Facebook group, you'll see posts from me. If you're not, check it out. If you have any interest in Chaos Knights, join it, hit it up. And if you want to come back to this YouTube channel at any point, we took a bit of a hiatus during coronavirus. I mean, we're not monetized or anything, so we kind of just do this on our own time. And me and all my buds I do this with have been essential workers, so we've all been busy as hell. So there's not a whole lot of content out. However, we are planning to start putting out battle reports and podcasts and talks like this in the future. So by all means, drop a subscribe, a like, get notifications when I do put up videos, because I'll be putting up more stuff like this soon. And I'll probably be expanding out into other armies pretty soon too. I mean, I do have Death Guard as well. I do also play Age of Sigmar. So expect a lot of content to roll out. We're not a mini war gaming or a tabletop tactics, unfortunately, but we'll be putting out some things for some fun. And if anybody wants to hear some things about armies that don't often get, you know, the limelight, just come on by and maybe you'll see something you like. But again, I'm Joe from Cold Country Wargaming. I hope you all enjoyed this talk, and I hope you'll come see us again soon sometime. Keep gaming, guys.